This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into our second hour of the program. Welcome back in as we roll on. Big weekend for Mizzou basketball. Sunday, they're going to match up against number one Kansas. Also this weekend, we should find out where Missouri is going to be bowling from a football perspective. Happy to welcome back on to the program sports director at KOMU TV in Columbia. He is Ben Arnett. Ben, appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. Let's start with a little bit of football because we learned today offensive lineman Armon Mumbu is going to be declaring for the NFL draft. Maybe a little bit of a surprise, and this certainly, assuming he would have been back with the Tigers next year, this is quite the loss for the team.
Yeah, it is. And you know, a good thing for Armon, obviously. He got the feedback that he wanted to get, that he's pretty confident he'll be a high-level draft pick, and that's hard to argue with. I mean, not just, you know, his size and his ability. I believe he graded out to the point he only allowed one sack this season, and he's the prototypical guy that NFL teams are going to want, but he was really consistent. I mean, this is a guy that started 25 straight games. Mizzou's got some offensive line depth. They were excited about how deep the line was going into the season. That's going to be put to the test as they move forward without Armon.
It's a Mizzou season that, in my eyes, was really good. And maybe there were some external expectations going into the season that this was a team that could potentially get to the college football playoff, and that's not going to happen. But a 9-win season, the potential for a 10-win season, you look at the type of record this team could have over a two-year span, it's been really, really good. And sometimes it feels like the social media chatter has been a little bit more negative than positive. I guess, do you see that? And what's your take on this? Because I feel like Tigers fans should be pretty happy with where the program's at.
I'm sorry, is the question, do I see negative chatter on social media? The answer is, regardless of the subject, is an emphatic yes. But no, I do, and I agree with you. And I think for Missouri, it is difficult to feel tantalizingly close to that because it's very simple right now to look and go, if they would have gotten that stop against South Carolina, mm-hmm. they'd be right there in that conversation. Who knows how that would play out? To me, it is another good season and another step forward for the program because Missouri has the attention of the college football world after the last 2 years, and not just the, you know, 20 wins and perhaps another one in two seasons in the toughest conference in America, but the way they are competing in all of the areas that are now so important in the remade world of college football of the last 3 to 4 years. They have been extremely successful in the transfer portal. They signed another top 20 recruiting class of high school kids earlier this week. You know, I don't hear Eli Drinkwitz voicing concerns about the ability of his program to compete in terms of revenue sharing, which is on the horizon. And when it comes to NIL, and Eli is usually, he's going to be vocal if he's not satisfied with something. You don't hear that from him. They've got a lot of really high-level transfer success stories, even coming off this last year's team with guys like Corey Flagg and the two running backs and Theo Weiss before them and Caden Green and other folks. And they're looking to replicate that again. To me, this bowl game is really important because for a program like Missouri, 10-3 is a lot better than 9-4 because 10-3 gets the attention of the pollsters going into next year. It puts you in that conversation once again. Hey, that's a 10-win SEC team. A 10-win SEC team is always going to be in the playoff conversation from day one, as opposed to going 9-4, or if they had done worse, if they'd lost that Arkansas game, you're really starting over from zero. That's the kind of program Missouri, unfortunately, is in the brand hierarchy. So I think it was important to go 9-3. I think it's even more important to go 10-3.
Speaking of potential 10-win SEC teams, the committee put Alabama in front of South Carolina, in front of Ole Miss. You could find a way to make an argument for any of those three teams for that top spot. The committee went with Alabama. Some controversy on them jumping over Miami. Some controversy on the potential of them maybe being ahead of SMU if SMU ends up losing to Clemson. I guess generally speaking, do you think Alabama is the best of those three SEC teams that I mentioned?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily argue against it. I just think that, you know, this whole conversation is the product of everybody in the conference getting better and us getting to the point where, you know, I don't think Vanderbilt beats Alabama because Alabama falls so far in 1 year without Nick Saban that, oh my goodness, they lost to Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's gotten that much better. I think everybody in the conference has gotten that much better. I look around at a league where, you know, Mark Stoops at Kentucky isn't done. He's been way too consistent and way too good for a decade there. You can see that program rebounding. I think things have gotten, you know, because of the changes in the sport that we talked about a moment ago, it's brought everybody, especially in the SEC, a lot closer together and made everybody a lot better. And so it's really hard to look at records the same way that we used to. But that Alabama team that I saw play Missouri and that we all saw play Georgia, yeah, that looks like a playoff team to me.
All right, let's jump over to basketball. Big one coming up on Sunday for the Tigers. They're going to match up against number one Kansas. Kansas just coming off a loss. I was kind of bummed to see Kansas lose that game because I have a hard time believing that Kansas is going to lose back-to-back games. That probably wasn't great for Missouri that Kansas chose their loss at Creighton.
No, I don't know about that. I mean, every game is its own thing. You never know. I think Bill Self was going to have that group fired up. Bill, I got to cover him from the other side when I worked in Wichita for a couple of years. You know, Bill, I think, cares more about this rivalry than he let on during the 8 or 9 years off in between games. I think he was going to have that group ready to play regardless. I think it's going to be a really good test for Missouri, obviously. It's a Missouri team that is considerably better than they were last year. And you've got three guys on this team who are from the Kansas side of the KC Metro that could be, you know, the determining factors in this game. It's Mark Mitchell, Tamar Bates, and Aiden Shaw. Shaw's played pretty well in this game over the years. Tamar Bates, I know, very much wants to play well and win this game. And his best friend and Duke transfer, Mark Mitchell, is with him now. It's going to be Mark Mitchell's first game. He was pretty cool about it today whenever he spoke to the media. I think it's this is going to feel like Mizzou KU games of the past. I think there's going to be a little fire in this one.
That Mizzou game against Cal, I mean, they were supposed to win it, but they got down, and so much was made in the second half of the coaching decision of really going to a lot of pick-and-roll offense. We saw some mid-range jumpers, things that it felt like coaching really played in. What do they take away specifically from that second half against Cal that they try to go forward for this game against Kansas?
Missouri's at their best when they're in transition. You know, it really all starts on the defensive end for Mizzou. That's kind of been the story for them since the first game of the season. The thing that's impressed me about this group, and again, will be key against Kansas and kind of the takeaway from Cal, is they've got much better guard play than they did a year ago. And when they do end up in a half-court situation, they got to stay patient. And they've got to look for chances to attack the basket. You mentioned it. It opens up so many things. So many of the problems with this team a year ago was the ball getting stuck on the perimeter, bad shots, not being able to get a good look, not being able to get to the foul line. This team so far this season, whether it's the second half against Cal or the other wins in the six-game winning streak or the great first half against Memphis, they attack the basket. They try to get downhill. They don't let the ball get stuck. They've got a lot better rebounding potential. And the other thing that opens up is it makes their three-point shooting a lot better. They're not taking as many three-pointers as they have the first couple of years under Dennis, and they're better three-pointers because they're in rhythm, catch-and-shoot threes. Before Caleb Grill got hurt, that's where he was excelling. That's where Marquez Warwick, the transfer from Northern Kentucky, continues to excel. When they move the ball, they're in rhythm, and they take in-rhythm shots. They're at their best. When they try to create off the bounce, they're at their worst.
Ben Arnett, he is the sports director at KOMU-TV in Columbia. He's on Twitter at Ben Arnett, KOMU. Ben, I always appreciate you taking some time with us. Thank you so much. Have a great holiday period, and hopefully we can talk soon.
Yeah, anytime. Same to you.
Awesome. Very good. Ben Arnett joining us on the program. We appreciate him spending some time with us today. It's going to be fun. I think he's right. The thing that he said there that most resonated with me, this Missouri-Kansas game coming up on Sunday is going to feel like the old school Missouri-KU games. And it's just good. Look, I'm a Big 12 guy because I went to school at K-State, and it always bummed me out when teams left the Big 12, and I understood why there was like this moratorium against current Big 12 teams playing former Big 12 teams and everything. Like, I understood that, but at the end of the day, it's good for the fan bases. It's good for college basketball to have rivalries like this alive, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens on Sunday. Kevin Wheeler joins us next. We'll talk Cardinals here on KMOX.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we start to come down the home stretch of the program today. Our final day originating this show from St. Louis. I will be in Dallas for baseball's winter meetings coming up next week, starting on Monday. Full shows every day, and we'll have our first countdown to opening day show on Thursday evening as well from the baseball winter meetings. So talk a little baseball. We generally bring him in on Fridays around this time. It's our good friend Kevin Wheeler. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Matt.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm jealous.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to Dallas for the winter meetings, but other than that, everything's good.
It'll be fun. You know, you get to, I've been around baseball for a long time, going back to like my minor league days and to where I've been. It's just, for me, the thing that I enjoy most of it is like, this is your baseball life because you see all the people. Like, I'll run into my general manager that I had when I was doing single-A baseball in Burlington, Iowa, and things like that. It's, if you've spent years and years and years in the game of baseball the way I have, it's the one opportunity every year to see all these people that you've been, that you've worked with closely at some point in time.
It's very cool. You know, I was talking about this. We were talking this on DGS, that, you know, the one thing that's really cool about the winter meetings and the reason that this gathering can spur action is because everybody's there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you have a conversation about trading a particular player and you're talking to three or four different teams, you can just go from room to room to room instead of a text from a distance or a phone call or whatever. The proximity can be kind of the catalyst to move things faster. It doesn't mean you'll get a deal done during the winter meetings, but it can move the process along faster.
And there, you know, John Mozeliak stays in his suite most of the time. Some executives work the lobby and everything. You don't see Mo that much. But you'll see you'll see his lieutenants walking around and they're having conversations. There's a lot of conversations that are very, very intentional over the duration of the few days.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some, you know, quiet dinners in those suites where people are hanging out and talking, you know, behind closed doors, maybe having a few drinks, and you know, again, sometimes a more social setting can spur things as opposed to, again, just a phone call or a text.
The hotel bar at night at the baseball winter meetings
isn't
is
that
something
where all the media hangs
out? Yeah, but a lot of people are there, and it is something to be seen for sure. So I'll enjoy being there coming up next week. A few things to go through from the week. Let's kind of start now and work our way back. Katie Wu had a report, and you know, Bernie and I talked about this on the Gas House Gang, which radio listeners will hear coming up in just a little while after the 8 o'clock news. But right now, the indications are from John Mozeliak, based off some comments that he made to Katie, that this team might not trade Ryan Helsley. This team might not trade Eric Fetty. That this team feels like they can compete next year, even in a scenario where this year is also about giving young guys runway to have some success. It doesn't all add up.
No,
that's the problem here, because you can look, math is math, numbers are numbers. You have so many positions on the field, you have so many at bats, you have so many roster spots. So I'm right now I am trying to figure out what it is actually going to look like, because it does feel like the messaging has changed a little bit.
I mean, if you only move like Steven Matz, are you really doing a reset?
No, but if you do trade Steven Matz, at least that overtly opens up the door for Michael McGreevy.
Sure it does, but I mean, like, okay, one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess the other thing is we're not going to demote Jordan Walker, right? I mean, is that the reset? The reset is we're going to open one rotation spot and then we're just not going to send Walker down?
I actually think the reset,
because that's not much of a change. I mean, it's a change, but it's not that much.
I think the reset has turned into, we're going to let Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman play every day, and we're going to find out what we have in these guys.
I guess, but I mean, like, Gorman's coming into his fourth year.
Yeah, but that's what it has turned into.
Yeah, I hope not. Like, I understand the Cardinals like to be guarded. They don't like to commit. Nobody does. And it could be an indication that maybe they don't like what's being proposed to them in deals. Maybe they're looking at it going, well, maybe it's just not worth it. You know, if this is all we're being offered for Helsley or for Fetty, maybe it's just better to give it a shot and see if we can go win 88 games and get in the playoffs or something along those lines. I mean, like, I can see that. I'm not sure that that's going to accomplish what they've been talking about, which is clearing the path for a different way of doing things. They don't have to do a fire sale either, though. You know, I think if two or three moves is enough, like I think you have to move Nolan Arenado.
I would agree.
I think you have to. You clear up no playing time if you don't on the offensive side.
If you do not trade Nolan Arenado, all of these things cannot happen. You can't get Nolan Gorman 600 at bats. You can't get J.J. Weatherholt the opportunity to come up in the middle of the season. You can't get Alec Burleson in the lineup on basically an everyday basis. Like, two of those three things.
Well, I mean, you can't get a lot of at bats for Thomas DeJacy.
Or Brendan Donovan, even.
So if Nolan Arenado's there, that means Gorman's going to be playing second. That means Donovan's going to be playing left. And then Newton center.
But then you close off the door to a potential Victor Scott.
I know, this is my point. Right. This is kind of the point. That one, any one of those being subtracted accomplishes the same thing. But of course you want to trade away the oldest of that group and obviously the most expensive. So you're not going to be able to get rid of all that money. I think that might be a pipe dream if you think you're going to be able to get that somebody to take all of that. You could, I guess, but you won't get much. And maybe that's fine. Maybe the balance is that's okay. We will save the money. We've got players that we want to look at, and that's okay. And if it ends up with, you know, Gorman and Donovan, one of them at second, one of them at third, that's fine. And then Newt's in left, and then Sejacy can play both of those positions. And then if Weatherholt tears it up, he can come in and take a spot later in the year, depending on who's doing what in that other group. So there a lot depends on clearing a spot. You're not clearing a spot at first base. That's Contreras. Catcher's covered. Right field is going to be Jordan Walker. Shortstop is Mason Wynn. So you only have left, third, second, and DH. And Burley's the DH.
Right.
At least against righties. At least against right-handers. I'll be curious to see if they do a better job this year playing platoon splits. Because last year, the lefties killed them. And they didn't do anything about it. They had a bench that was completely not helpful in that regard.
This is where Luke and Baker plays in.
If they decide they can carry basically a DH only, though. I mean, like, can you carry a guy that's only a platoon DH on the left facing lefties? Because you don't have any flexibility there if you're doing that.
I think you do carry him. And he can play.
I don't have a problem with it, but boy, is it a tight fit.
It's tight, but he can play at first base every once in a while if you need him to. I'm not going to tell
you.
So
let's say he takes the Matt Carpenter role.
Yeah.
Like job, right? That spot. And then Sejacy takes the Crawford spot. And you've got a backup catcher, which is going to be either Herrera or Pajes, depending on who's playing, starting that day. And then what? Are you going to keep both Scott and Ciani? Or do you find a right-handed bat that can somehow fit into your outfield mix to, you know, give Newt a day off against a tough lefty, or to spot up in center field once in a while? Like, if you could find a right-handed bat that can play center field at least competently, that would be a nice complement to what you have. But where is that guy?
Yeah, and it's hard to make that all work. Like
this is my point. Right. This is my point. So it's not easy, and you can do it. And I would like to see Baker get that chance. Because if you're trying to win games this year, which they are, use that. Use the platoon advantage for certain guys. And you don't have to make it always the same guys. Maybe it's a day off for Newt today, but the next time it's a lefty, it's a day off for Gorman. And then maybe the next time it's a day off for Ciani. Like, it doesn't have to be like a complete line change. It can just be certain guys getting opportunities to jump in there. Maybe Burley only plays against righties, or primarily does. In fact, I would suggest that.
I would too.
And that would be the spot where Baker can DH against lefties. And it complicates it, because you'd be like, well, maybe we want other guys to get DH time for rest. I say forget that. Forget that. And if you want to do that, fine. Then Baker just gets that day off. Who cares?
Right, or Burleson gets a day in the outfield. I mean, he's
whatever.
Fine.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, yeah. Yes. So I think a lot of it revolves around clearing out a spot, and the most logical one is Nolan Arenado, but that's clearly tied to what else happens, right? And it is directly linked to the Juan Soto market, because depending on where Soto goes, that's going to leave four other teams looking for bats. Well, that doesn't mean that their answer is we want Nolan Arenado, but that could mean that if the Yankees lose out on Soto, they could say, all right, we want Alex Bregman, and we're going to sign him to play third base, and we'll move other things around. And now the Astros need a third baseman.
Right.
And that's where you get in. Now, maybe some of that, you know, Willy Adames could play in that. He can play third and short. But the point is, as those pieces start to move around, there could be a team that goes, man, we really need a third baseman. Boston wants to get better defensively at third. The Yankees want to get better defensively at third. Houston's going to need somebody to play third if it's not Alex Bregman. Philly is talking about a change at third with the idea of being a better defensive team on the infield, because Trey Turner's not a good defensive shortstop. Stott's really good at second. But Bohm is not good at third. He's just at third. So, and in that ballpark, Nolan probably hits 25 homers.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fit in Philly.
He's a fit in a lot of places, yeah. But then we have the wild card. Where will he go? Right. Where will he accept the deal to?
I think he's a fit in New York with the Yankees.
I do, too.
If I had to choose a team right now that I think he ends up with, I would, by a very thin margin, I would probably choose the Yankees.
Yeah, it's entirely tied to Bregman, which is tied to Soto.
Right.
Right, because if the Yankees get Soto, well, they're not doing any of that. They'll be playing on the margins with other guys. But then that means, okay, that means the Blue Jays. And by the way, the Blue Jays would be a fit for Arenado, but I don't think it's a good fit.
I don't know if he accepts that trade.
I agree. Because if I'm Nolan Arenado, I say I want to be on a contender. That's the whole point. Well, Toronto is no better than the fourth best team in the East.
Right.
So
if you squint really hard.
Oh, you can see how they could be good.
Yeah.
You can see that, like, but it's not there now. Right? I mean, like, Baltimore's better right now. New York is better right now. Boston's going big this offseason. It sounds like they're going hard after Burns and Fried and Soto and maybe Bregman. So, and by the way, Boston's a really good fit for Nolan Arenado, too, depending on how these pieces fall together. And the Dodgers are a hard one, too, because I have a hard time. The Dodgers have to move a lot of pieces around to make that work.
Yeah, I don't know if he makes the Dodgers that much better, either.
He makes them a lot better defensively.
Yes. But when you look at what you have to...
And he's going to hit sixth, so who cares?
You got to figure out where you're moving all the pieces, and at the end of the day...
Well, that's the thing. It's like Max Muncy then has to play second.
Right.
Is Max Muncy a good second baseman? I mean, honestly, he's probably better there than he is at third. He's probably more... But you can hide him better at second than you can at third base. Maybe. But then they got to move Gavin Lux, which they might do. I'm sure a team would love to take Gavin Lux. But... You know, who knows what their ideas are, because the Dodgers could be looking at big. They could be looking at Teoscar Hernandez coming back. Like, you just don't have any idea where they're going to go. I see how it could work, but it's not just a simple make this move.
No, it's a challenging thing to make that happen.
It's going to take some shuffling.
You know, when it comes to Helsley, and this kind of goes back to the dominoes falling, Devin Williams is probably going to get moved this offseason. There were some rumblings about 2 weeks ago that maybe the Brewers weren't going to move him, and now it's come back around that they probably will. And that's the move for them. It makes a lot of sense. Your guy, Pete Fairbanks, is evidently on the market. A guy like Ryan
Not
Presley.
Not a shock at all for Tampa.
Yeah, looking for a bounce back with Presley and getting back into a closer spot. He's going to be out there. If you're the Cardinals, I think you need to just be comfortable sitting back, letting all of that play out, and then see who's left and what you can get for Helsley.
Well, this may be why we're hearing this stuff about them being comfortable with keeping Helsley, because the market for potential closers is pretty crowded. I mean, you've got Estevez out there in free agent, who's coming off a great year. You've got Hoffman from Philly, there are some rumors that teams are looking at him as maybe as a starter to pull the Seth Lugo thing, to go from the pen to the starting rotation. But he's a candidate to close for somebody, and he doesn't cost you prospects. You know, you mentioned Devin Williams, you mentioned Pete Fairbanks, you know, Presley could be available. There's like two or three other guys. Kirby Yates is out there who's coming off a great year. Like, it might just be that because of all of those options, teams don't want to give you what you need to get for Helsley. If that's the case, then keep him.
Right.
Because something could change in July.
And you don't sell low on Ryan Helsley.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's not we've said this all along about Helsley. You don't have to trade him. It's just if you get the right deal, you trade him.
100%.
And, you know, with the sheer number of possibilities that are out there for teams looking for help in the ninth inning, it's a hard sell there. I mean, even Brandon Finnegan's out there. You know, he might be a cost, like a lower cost, you know, upgrade for somebody, but he's closed 35 games last year. Was it 39 games maybe? Did he save last year? He's not that great. Like, his batted ball data is not great. But, you know, again, he's probably not going to cost, he's not going to cost you your top prospects. You know, I don't think the Cardinals move Helsley just to move money.
No.
If they're moving him, it's because they want talent. And if I have to choose as another team, do I sign Estevez and maybe overpay a little bit, but I get to keep all my prospects? I probably choose that over giving up my prospects for Helsley. But get to July, when their options are limited for all those contenders and somebody went down with an injury or something, then you might be able to command that better return.
I'm sure the Yankees and the Dodgers, if they had it to do all over again, they would have liked to pick up some more relief pitching at the
deadline.
And they're
both in that market now.
Right. So that, I think that's...
I mean, I forgot Clay Holmes is out there too. Yeah.
That's going to be something to watch. Who was it? Who's thinking about making Clay Holmes a starter?
I don't know. I saw that too. Yeah.
Was it the Mets?
Might be.
I mean, that's... David Stearns has done stuff like that.
And I mentioned Hoffman in that regard. Those are guys that have three pitches.
Yeah.
And one thing they didn't have when they were younger players was the command. And by the way, in Hoffman's case, he also didn't have his kind of hybrid cutter slider thing. He didn't have it. So now he's got an upper 90s fastball. He's got a low 90s split and a low 90s cutter slider hybrid. So he throws them all with the same effort. And he throws them all for strikes. So not that crazy to be like, maybe that guy can go do this for five innings instead of one. Yeah. If you can, because he was a starter coming along. He was a first round pick as a starting pitcher. And, you know, we'll see. I like that idea. In fact, I suggested today, it's not out yet, I don't think, but in the next episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball, I joined Derek today. And I suggested that that might even be a nice, smart play for the Cardinals. If you want to make a play on a three-year deal on Hoffman with the idea that you're going to say, hey, we're going to make you a starter. And, you know, if it doesn't work, then we'll go back to the pen because we know that works for you. And you can just go back into a high leverage role. But if it works, you could be a starter for us. Now, they're not going to do that.
No.
It's just one of the – Derek asked me, like, if you were going to go into the free agent market as the Cardinals and look at something, to me it would be that. It would be a gamble on a high-stuff person that I could turn into something, a bigger asset.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We've got tonight, me and Bernie on Gas House Gang at 8 o'clock in just a little while. And then Monday, I'll be in Dallas, and it'll be all four of us.
You'll be joining us from the road.
Yes.
You're going to wear a cowboy hat?
I don't think so.
Belt buckle?
Have you ever owned a cowboy hat?
No.
I owned one at one point. I very rarely wore it. I like made a trip to Texas, and I bought one.
I was going to say, if you're not in Texas, is it even allowed to wear them?
You don't see people walking around with cowboy hats very often.
Not very much.
Maybe I should go get a cowboy hat, come back here, walk around downtown St. Louis wearing a cowboy hat.
So when you get down to Dallas, first stop should be at the Texas store and get yourself a hat, a belt buckle, some boots, and some beef jerky and some tobacco.
Yeah, because that's me.
Yeah.
That's really me.
Straight up Matt Pauly.
Good to see you, Kevin.
See you, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We've got more coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We're back at it here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. We do start to wrap things up, but you don't want to go anywhere. Coming up at 8 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang today. Myself and Bernie Miklas get into a lot of things, including what we just talked about with Kevin Wheeler a few moments ago. Get Bernie's thoughts on kind of the messaging that we're getting from the Cardinals right now, because it felt like this was going to be a step back year, and now the messaging is turning into maybe they're trying to compete a little bit more. I didn't mention this to Kevin. I should have. You'll hear me say it during the Gas House Gang. To me, and I could be completely off base and wrong and incorrect on this, it felt like the messaging started to change right around the time of the election. And the two things that happened right around the election was, one, sports gambling being voted in. So the Cardinals knew that that revenue stream was going to come in. And then right around that time, they also re-upped with their RSN, what is now FanDuel Sports Network Midwest, where they are taking less money. It has been reported, I believe, by the Post-Dispatch that it is a 23% cut. And that's not nothing. That's a lot of money. I'm not trying to be dismissive of their local TV deal being cut by a quarter. That is notable, but these other teams around baseball have taken a much larger and much more significant cut than what the Cardinals have. They are lucky to be in the spot that they're at. And like Kevin and I talked about a few moments ago, if nothing else, there's now kind of some certainty. They know the amount of money they're bringing in off TV. They know that there's going to be sports gambling revenue coming in at some point. Sidebar, I'm just kind of shooting off the hip here. I haven't heard anything. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. I haven't heard anything about the state of Missouri starting to like build out the sports gambling infrastructure where sports books are going to start opening up and things like that. Maybe there's some things going on behind the scenes, but no date has been given. I think it was maybe the mayor of Kansas City who had said that he was hopeful that there would be sports gambling in Kansas City around the time of the Super Bowl, which seemed like a very aggressive timeline on getting everything put in place. I haven't heard much of anything, and maybe I'm reading and he's listening to the wrong people. I don't even know who to try to talk to get an update on how all of that is going on. But I would be very interested to know what is going on behind the scenes to get potential sports books and things like that across the state of Missouri ready to open, and what the process is on when we might see sports books start to open. We expect to see a sports book inside of Ballpark Village. I would assume that that's going to be there come opening day this year. I don't know for sure, but I think it's a safe bet that there's going to be some type of sports book, betting window, something like that inside of Ballpark Village. So just kind of a off-the-cuff thought there as we do start to wrap things up here on the program. I'm going to be in Dallas. I'm leaving this weekend, and baseball winter meetings kind of unofficially start on Sunday. Things start to happening, and then they start in earnest on Monday. We'll do Sports Open Line next week. Every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we will be live from Dallas. Our first countdown to opening day show, that's going to be on Thursday night. Myself, Mike Claiborne, Ricky Horton, we're all going to be coming your way from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and then that's going to start our weekly countdown to opening day show. We have reached that time of the year where it's going to be happening on a weekly basis, not just here on KMOX, but across the Cardinals radio network, so always enjoy that. But so if you're looking for coverage from the winter meetings, we're going to have a lot of it for you here on KMOX. I'll be doing appearances on various shows on the station. Reports are going to be running in the morning and afternoon. We'll do Sports Open Line live from the winter meetings each night. And then also the Gas House Gang, which you're about to hear, but that we do live at 12 noon each day. I'll be on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from baseball's winter meetings, along with some combination of Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman, and Bernie Miklas. So we have you covered. What could be, I'm expecting interesting winter meetings. Now, last year they'd already they'd kind of already made their moves with Gibson and Lynn, and Gray was before then too, if I remember correctly. So going into last year, it felt a little bit anticlimactic for the Cardinals. It did not feel that way though for the industry. Yet industry wide, almost nothing happened last year, and I feel like there's the potential that something happens with the Cardinals. What Kevin and I talked about earlier, and I think Kevin's right, but I also think it's got the possibility of changing, the idea that to get Nolan Arenado moved, you have to wait on some of these other third base dominoes to fall. I think from a common sense, from a logical perspective, that makes sense. But if some team like gets the sense that They're not gonna get Bregman, that Bohm doesn't really make them a better team, that Adames, working through the whole is he gonna go from shortstop to third base thing, if all that just isn't in the cards, that they can just go ahead and knock out a deal for Nolan Arenado and it makes their team better, I think that could potentially happen. I don't think it's an above 50% chance, but I don't think it's nothing. I think there's a 25, 30, 35% chance that Nolan Arenado gets moved during the course of the baseball winter meetings. I think there's a very good possibility that Steven Matz ends up getting moved during the winter meetings. And then I think there could be some other things happening across baseball, whether or not There's been talk that Juan Soto might make his decision prior to the meetings. I'm somewhat hopeful that even if he makes his decision, that maybe he pumps the brakes a little bit. It is good for the game of baseball. I talk about this a lot. As somebody who loves the game of baseball, and especially when you're competing against football as you are at this time of the year, anything that can put a spotlight on the game in a big way, I think is good and healthy for the sport. So it's everybody who covers baseball shows up to the winter meetings, and MLB Network has their live set, and ESPN has their lives. Like, everybody is there, and there is a very intentional focus on the game. If you can get something big to happen as the winter meetings are happening, see a Juan Soto signing, I think that's good for baseball. So I am hopeful. We got to make it another 72 hours or so. I am hopeful that they are going to be able to work something out where Soto does not officially make his decision until after the baseball winter meetings get underway. And that would be quite the bang to get that all started. So, yeah, we'll be there coming up on Monday. Looking forward to making the trip. And hopefully we'll be able to provide you some good content, some good coverage from what could be a very interesting meetings. John Mozeliak does speak with us on an every night basis over the run of the meetings. So that will be, we'll get information from him on how things are going, maybe some more clarification on what the messaging is, what the messaging should be about how much they can expect to be able to contend and compete this upcoming season. That is going to do it for this edition of the program. Thanks so much for being tuned in, and we look forward to talking to you from Dallas for another Sports Open Line coming up on Monday night. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday here on KMOX.